Thanks for listening to the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Boom! What up, America? Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. Brought to you by Farmers at Farmers. We've seen almost everything, so we know how to cover almost anything. When it's game time, have an experienced player help you stay ahead of the game. Put their experience into play at farmers.com. Keeping our eye on the college hoop. Colgate, not the toothpaste. That's actually a school, and it's a good one. Taking on Tennessee. Right about now, it's about to tip off. UC Irvine, or to people who have never been to Southern California, Cal Irvine. No one calls it Cal Irvine, Southern California. But UC Irvine taking on Kansas State. That game tied at the half. And Texas Tech up 10 with 14:33 to go against Northern Kentucky, which is a relative location. Where are you located? Northern Kentucky. There is an airport in Northern Kentucky. It's actually Cincinnati's airport. Nonetheless, a bunch of things to get to. Aaron Torres, college basketball writer for The Athletic. He's also a Fox Sports Radio host. He'll join us in about 15 minutes. We'll get his take on the games of last night, the games of today, the dominance of the Big Ten, the destruction of the Big East, and at least one, what felt like weird firing in the SEC today is Bryce Drew, it's one thing to fire Bryce Drew. It's another thing to fire Bryce Drew during the first round of the NCAA tournament, which is famous for Bryce Drew. Anyway, that was 21 years ago today. He hit the game winner against Ole Miss, who just got shellacked by Oklahoma. Man, did they get shellacked by Oklahoma. Lambasted. And Jared Culver hits a three, and Texas Tech is up 47-34. There's a lot of things to get to from last night, but I think the most pertinent is this sense that Aaron Henry, who's a freshman wing for Michigan State, was somehow verbally assaulted or abused by legendary head coach Tom Izzo. And I'm supposed to have some super, super hot scalding take on how Tom Izzo stepped over the line because he yelled at his player. And then he stood up and yelled at him again. And he was very close to him. Now, look, I get that times have changed in many ways. I get that. I understand that. But they haven't changed so much that we're moving the line. I thought, honestly, Ryan, you had the best line ever. Ever that I've ever heard, which is Ryan Music is he's 14 years old.
Just turned 15, Doug.
Awesome.
Just turned 15. Woo!
It's good times. Good times, dude. Good times. Anyway, Ryan Music, I think what you said was, hey, I grew up, what was it? I grew up, you know, thinking I was liberal, and now all of a sudden I read social media and I feel like the most conservative guy ever, right?
Basically, yes.
Well, no, go ahead. You can give me whatever the line was.
Yeah, no, I mean, that was pretty much it. It's just we live in a day and age now where, you know, being who I am, where I grew up, how I grew up, always looked at myself and thought of myself as someone who's fairly liberal. And now the way people react and the general Twitter consensus of things definitely makes you feel like you're now some hyper right wing conservative.
Yeah. I don't believe, like, there are some people that believe, like, listen, you are, you know, you're a Democrat until you make money and you get older, then you become a Republican. Like, no, I don't think so. I just think it's, we just keep kind of moving the line on social media and social justice to where we're just the point of being ridiculous. And I don't think this is only a part of basketball culture. That's what you're hearing from me. Well, it's just basketball, old basketball culture. We were coached this way, so we think it's okay. Like, look, I was actually coached both ways. My first college coach is a man named John McLeod, who coached 18 years in the NBA. I think only twice raised his voice above speaking level. That's it. Only twice. And it just didn't work for college kids. And we had smart guys, we had tough guys, we had soft guys at Notre Dame, and we weren't that good, and that's part of it. But there's something about being 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, where you're just, something about being a guy, where there is a little bit of fear needed. There is a little bit of yelling needed, of getting in somebody's face in order to motivate them. You can't do it to everybody. You have to know who you're doing it to. But you do it to enough people. You do it enough times. And by the way, text to text openly. And you do it to the right person at the right time, you get the right amount of motivation. Let me draw a parallel for you. I read this study, and I quoted it to Ryan, and I read it before we started the show, which is 20 years ago, 10% of Yale students had an A or B average, 10%. Like high B, 50, 85% or higher. 3.0 or higher. Now it's over 80%. And what we've done is we've created this artificial world where even when you mess up, like, that's okay. Just say you did wrong and you go about your business. Here's Tom Izzo on what happened yesterday.
When you're a freshman now at this time of year, you don't make mental mistakes on things that when we're telling a guy which way he goes or not running back or, you know, there were some things Aaron didn't do a very good job of. And then I did get after him and he did respond and he did make a couple big buckets and he did make some big free throws. But that's not good enough. This is one and done time, you know. The my bads are out the window. If they're my bads because that team played better or that guy played better, if it's my bad because I decided to jog back instead of sprint back, then it is your bad and you're going to hear about it. I get a kick out of you guys. Get after somebody because you're trying to hold them accountable. I don't know what kind of business you're in, but I'll tell you what, if I was the head of a newspaper and you didn't do your job, you'd be held accountable. That's the way it is.
Michigan State has something they call non-negotiables. Three things: run, rebound, defend. Not negotiable. Like, look, you take a shot, we can, you know, you see something in the past, it's like, okay, we can discuss it. Run, rebound, defend. Now, this isn't just because they win. And look, John Beilein, though he gets after guys, he's not nearly as vociferous. On the other hand, he does recruit different kids and does coach differently. But the idea of holding a guy accountable, and oh yeah, by the way, here's the big thing for me. Like, look, I played Freddie Sutton, and his thing was he would get after you. Never cursed. I never heard him curse. Not once. And some of my actions could bring any man to curse when they're coaching me. He never cursed. But he would get into you now. And there was a little bit of healthy fear. He was in his early 60s then, and I'm almost positive all of us could have taken him, but none of us would have taken a shot, right? It's just this one of those like healthy fear. Fear is a little bit healthy. Again, you don't want it to be so scared you can't be yourself. But when people jump up in you, get up into you, and motivate you, and call you on things to which you're going to try and duck and dodge out of, we should be encouraging more of this. We know what the line is. We absolutely, positively know the line, right? And even touching a kid, which guys freak out about, and he didn't. And I've seen Mike Montgomery do it. I've seen Fran McCaffrey do it. Even just grabbing a guy and going, hey, wake up. I'll give you an example. Two examples real quick. So, what night is this? This is Saturday. Friday. It's Friday, right? So Wednesday, I coached a baseball game. And I'm the assistant coach, but I've coached at this level of baseball for two different seasons, a fall and a spring season as well. So the coach who's the dad, the head coach who's another, who's a dad, like calls on me because they hadn't played real baseball before, right? With leadoffs and with drop third strikes and all this other stuff. And it's pretty cool to have somebody go like, hey, what should we be doing here? But I don't, I usually coach first base. In this particular case, I was sitting on the bucket and I was just kind of overseeing the whole thing and yelling out stuff to help everybody out. And it was fun to be like the massive overseer. The head coach is at third base. His name's Calvin. Great dude. Lawyer. His son's name is Trent. Trent's a nice kid. He's a year younger, a grade earlier than my kid. And he's a good little ball player. So he comes around third to score, and a throw is coming at the plate, and his dad is yelling, get down, get down! And he doesn't, and he steps on home plate, and he slips a little bit, kind of hurts himself. So I asked him, I said, Trent, did you hear your dad? No, no. And he said, and then coach, the plate was slippery. I was like, well, your dad said slide, because anytime there's a play at the plate, you have to slide. And the plate being slippery, that's another reason that you slide. In addition to the fact that you could be called out if there's a play at the plate, that's kind of the rules of the league we play in. And I think it's the rules of most parts of baseball. The idea is if you step on home plate and you're going to slip. So, oh yeah, by the way, if you can slide, make sure you get the plate. And then even after you did, touch it again. But the point was that even though his own father, who has not a loud voice as I do, but has a loud voices yelling, get down, slide. And he doesn't do it. And his thing was like, I didn't hear him. And he's 9, and who knows what was going through his mind. I think what's going through his mind was, man, that plate was really slippery. And I got to play Fortnite tonight. And I hope the baseball doesn't hit me. And I might have to go to the bathroom. Like all of these things. Sometimes, just as guys, the way we're wired, we need somebody to put our hands on our shoulders and go, hey, anytime you come home, you slide. Last night I was coaching my son basketball. He's got an all-star team. I run practice. He wasn't listening. He's being disrespectful. Rolled his eyes when I asked to go through something he thought he knew. Kicked him out of practice. Took him outside, yelled at him. Not about anything other than his attitude and paying attention and working hard. Look, it doesn't mean it's the only way and doesn't mean that you always have to bring your voice to 100 decibels. You don't just get in kids' face and scream at them every time. And there are coaches that have been successful speaking just like this, making eye contact to a guy. But if we're going to take away Izzo's personality, Izzo's energy, Izzo's passion, when he was right, it's what he told the kid's parents he would do, what he told the kid he would do, and he's simply holding a kid accountable. When it's not personal, it's only about effort. It's about, if you can play hard during every moment of a basketball game, there's nothing you can't do in life. Like, what are we doing? We're creating this artificial atmosphere where everything is just perfect, and if you mess up, it's okay, you'll do better. Sometimes we don't have time to stop and make sure Johnny's okay with the lesson that's being taught. Sometimes it's okay to yell at your children. Sometimes it's okay to allow your kids to be coached.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Let's catch up with a guy who just got a win, a come-from-behind win over Cincinnati. They had some rebounding issues in the first half, some foul trouble issues in the first half, but they went on a 7-0 run, hit some threes, 7 of 10 from three, I think 7-11 down, three down the stretch. And maybe more importantly for them, got some stops. And Iowa, friend McCaffrey's team, ends up taking down Cincinnati in the first round in Columbus. So in the state of Ohio, beats Cincinnati. He joins us in the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. Friend, I know you just got done doing media. You're still trying to kind of catch your breath. But what changed for your team? You guys got off to a very, very slow start.
We did, Doug. And obviously, when you're playing Cincinnati, the first thing you're concerned about is rebounding. We gave up 9 offensive rebounds in the first half for 11 points. Not the formula for success against them. Got down 18-5. Started mixing some defenses a little bit. and I thought showed some toughness in that stretch, Doug, and got it back to a manageable number. Going at halftime down 5, O'Hanlon hits a shot at the buzzer at the end of the half. That was big. So, you know, it was our ball coming out to start the second half. You're only down 5. You know, you got to take care of the glass. You know, whether we're man or zone. And in the second half, as you pointed out, we only gave up 3 offensive rebounds. Rebounded the ball shooting as well. And I thought did a much better job of getting shots for people. We established that we could score inside with Luka Garza, despite Tyler Cook's foul trouble. You know, I thought he was really good when he was in there. But I thought Garza was great. And then our ball movement and our decisions to penetrate and kick. We had some critical threes, you know, coming down a stretch. I thought Luka and Connor's back-to-back threes were really, really important. And then Joe's three at the end, Bohannon's three. I mean, then we made our free throws and made the plays we had to coming down a stretch.
Have you ever won a game when Bohannon misses 2 free throws? I don't remember that ever happening before.
I don't think it's ever happened in the history, or I should say in his lifetime. So I mean, I guess
and for people who don't know, we're talking about Jordan Bohannon, who has hit more clutch shots this year in college basketball than anybody.
Yeah.
Is an incredible 90% free throw shooter. Of course, his brothers have all played in college, and like he gets at the free throw line, like that's in. He missed one early in the second half. Then missed one late in the second half. You're like, what is going? He's a guy that everybody. It's crazy.
Yeah, we do everything we can to make sure the ball's in his hands in that situation. He did make the one big one, which was huge.
Yep.
Tyler made a big one, and you know, held him off.
A couple quick things. I know you're super busy. I saw one of the you mentioned how big that shot he hit at the end of the first half. Wouldn't have had an opportunity had you guys not gone 2-for-1, right? Wieskamp. Now, was that a called 2-for-1? Is that an automatic? Was that Bohannon just basketball IQ? Wieskamp shot a 3 with like 45 seconds to go in the first half. Was that you or was that your point guard?
You know, it's funny, Doug. I mean, it was actually Nicholas Bear that shot one from about 38 feet, which I thought was ill-advised. But I asked him after the game, I said, I'm hoping you were thinking 2-for-1. He said, Coach, I was. So I don't know if he's telling me the truth, but he went with it.
Okay. A couple other ones. You mentioned Garza, and you mentioned your son. Like, and Wieskamp hit a big 3. They're freshmen and sophomores. Is it they don't know any better? They don't understand or there's something special about those 3 in that they weren't bothered by playing in the NCAA tournament that big a game?
You know what, Doug? I think it's a function of the stage we play on all year. You play 20 games in our league. Everyone's a big stage. You know, you play every team has an NBA arena. We played at the 2K Classic at Madison Square Garden back in November. We played in the Big Ten tournament at the United Center. So we're used to that. So those guys don't play like freshmen. I mean, I was really proud of Connor today because he was throwing up before the game. We had to put an IV in him, and he comes out with those 2 huge assists in the second half in a gigantic 3 and gave Jordan a little bit of rest. I didn't want to have to ride Jordan the whole game, which I thought I might have to with Connor being sick. But, I mean, everybody just pitched in that stretch and really showed some incredible resiliency.
Last thing, you mentioned your son and that he was sick and that he had to take an IV. And I know it maybe hasn't dawned on yet. What is that like? This is a first-time experience for you, coaching your son, like during an NCAA. Did you get any time to appreciate that? That's your kid hitting a big shot.
You know, it's been an unbelievable ride, Doug. I think that's a great question. You know, all year long, it's a little bit of a different feeling when he's playing in a crucial situation. And I talked to Cubby and John Beilein and Craig Neal, I mean, guys that coach their son about that. What it's like, and the thing about Connor that's been impressive is he knows who our good players are and he gets them the ball. He's got enough offensive game to keep everybody honest. Like I said, we made a huge 3, makes his free throws, but he settles us down. He knows where everybody's supposed to be. So the old saying, like it's a coach on the floor, it kind of is because he's so smart, and you know. There's nothing better, Doug. I know the relationship you had with your dad when you played for him, and I watched you play for him. And, you know, I think at times he was probably harder on you than everybody. There's times when I'm probably harder on Connor than anybody. But at the end of the day, you know, I love him to death, and I'm just couldn't be more proud right now to watch him enjoy this experience with his teammates.
All right. Well, Big Ten is currently undefeated right now, so that 20-game war that Jim Delaney came up with seems to be paying dividends here during March Madness. Congratulations on being one of those undefeated teams. Go out and scout your next opponent, and thanks for joining us.
My pleasure, Doug. Take care, my man.
It's Fran McCaffrey, head coach of the Iowa Hawkeyes.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific.
Wildest game of yesterday was Auburn's stunning come-from-ahead, almost collapse win against New Mexico State. The head coach of the Tigers is a longtime friend. Of course, he is no unknown. We've seen him in the tournament before. With UW-Milwaukee, we've seen him win Division II championships, and of course, we've seen him take Tennessee to the Sweet 16. He's Bruce Pearl, head coach of Auburn. He joins us in the Doug Gottlieb Show. If somebody didn't watch the game, they're like, "Hey, Bruce, how'd your game go against New Mexico State?"
Just like we scripted it, Doug. Just like we scripted it, man. Hey, listen, I've yelled at kids too, you know. And the great coach Pat Dye from Auburn said, "You can coach them as hard as you love them," and I believe in that. And kids still want discipline. They still want to be coached. And for all your parents out there, you can yell at your kids because you love them, and they're going to listen to you because they respect you and because you know they know you care about them. And so, God, just relax, everybody.
I got a great one for you, okay? So Bruce Pearl joining us. I've known you forever. And, of course, Steven's on your staff now, and you coached him at Tennessee.
Right.
So he loves my son, Hayes. Like, Hayes is his guy. You can tell him the story. So last night we get to practice, and he's got an all-star team tournament this weekend, and he missed the team practice the night before because he had baseball. And I'm telling you, we wanted to go over a horn series and a couple other things, and he rolled his eyes at me, and he wasn't working hard. And then he was just kind of walking through things when we were trying to go hard, and I kicked him out. I said, "Get out of my gym." I made him sit outside by himself, and then while we were going through our offense dry, I came outside and I laid into him pretty good. And I wonder how many times you kick Steven out of practice.
No, I still kick him out of practice. I mean, you know, and I yell him at the bench, and he yells at me, and it works. And you know, we can't lose that. Listen, we got to stay tough. And but listen, man, it is March Madness. It's crazy.
Yep.
Look, Doug, you're out west. You know how good Mexico State is, right? I mean, that's a team. It was a tough draw, 5-12. They're athletic. They're deep. They're well coached.
Really
they've got a good inside game. It was a tough matchup for both teams. We won and did not play great, which is a good sign for us. Fortunately, we had a 7-9 point lead with about a minute and a half to go and folded and fell apart and had to make about 7 or 8 mistakes to give them a chance to win the game. But here's our advantage. We did make 5 out of 6 of our last free throws because in the SEC we're in a lot of close games. And New Mexico State, I told our guys, one of the advantages we have is the last time they had a close game was at Kansas, and they missed a couple free throws then. I said, you know what? That's the one thing about being a dominant team in a league like that is they just haven't had that experience of having to close the close ones out.
Jared Harper, I've seen as your best winning player and your leader, right? And he was a winner, and he hit the game-winning, I think, free throw in high school, you know, to win the state championship. How do you explain him fouling out in such a boneheaded manner? Like that you gave him a look like, I cannot believe what I just saw.
Yeah, he had to make 4 or 5 mistakes at the end, and he did. But let me tell you something, Doug. 5 games in 8 days. And our guys were popped. I'm just telling you. It was crazy. When you play 4 games in a row in Nashville and you win an SEC championship and you cut down nets, those last game 3 and game 4, it's pure adrenaline. You know, you're 40 minutes away from being a champion. And I don't care how tired you are, you're just rolling. Come home Sunday night, go to class Monday, travel halfway across the country Tuesday morning, have a practice in the altitude on Wednesday, and you play Thursday morning at 11:30. Our guys just didn't quite have it, and that's the beauty of the tournament. That's the beauty of the matchup. You just don't know all these different factors. So we win. We advance. We got Kansas tomorrow night. You know, Lawson's a pro. Dotson is a very, very tough cover. They still have 4 McDonald's All-Americans. They're not the Kansas team that they've been in the past, but they're still a great team and a Hall of Fame coach. And it's going to be all about whether or not we can cover Lawson on the inside and whether or not we can keep them, you know, from getting to the rim. That's going to be the real key.
Bruce Pearl joining us in the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. Last thing, I know you got to go. You mentioned
that.
How.
Listen, if we could talk later today, I got all the time in the world. I got the guys waiting for me in film.
I will call you off air, but I want to ask you on air about this. Like, how do you manage? Does it change the way you coach, knowing this is going to be your sixth game in like 9 days, right? And you're playing in altitude. And look, your teams play fast and are well conditioned, but that's just a lot for any college kid to play. How does that change how you coach?
It won't very much, because Tom Davis taught me that as we get into March, don't shorten your bench. And, you know, Javon McCormick came off our bench and played brilliantly. He's played great in March. And so we are going to trust that process. And so, yes, Jared Harper, Bryce Brown, I got a couple guys that have played heavy minutes. So you know what I might do, Doug? I might give them a little bit more rotation early in the game. I don't want them to have to play many more than 32. Other than that, we're playing 9 guys, and it's an equal opportunity, and that's how we play. And you can't change it. If we don't turn Kansas over some, and let Bill Self get the ball to places on the floor he wants to get it, we got no shot.
Can't wait to see the game. Tell Stevie I said hello. Best of luck with the Jayhawks, and we'll talk soon.
All right, look forward.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Jordan Murphy, you haven't seen him, the senior. What a stud. Moved into second all-time in the scoring list in Minnesota Golden Gopher history. 1,802 points. He's a double-double machine and apparently now a three-point shooter. Richard Pitino joins us, head coach of Minnesota. Look, you let him take a couple of game, but take a couple of threes a game, but he'd made like 6 coming in. Did you tweak something? Like, what happened to your team that suddenly guys that had struggled shooting the basketball, like Jordan, shot it so well?
Well, I'd like to act like I did something, you know, to make myself sound smart, but we didn't really do anything a whole lot different. I do think this, Doug, and you know, because you played, I think it's contagious. I think we hit some shots early, and I thought we got our confidence going. And I do think that our offense is a lot better when our defense is clicking, and I thought our defense and our rebounding early in the game was really, really good.
I'm wondering about the success of the Big Ten, and it's interesting because, look, 20 league games is a lot. I mean, that's just a lot, especially of talented, and you having coached, obviously, in the Big Ten and the ACC, having coached at Louisville previously, you know, and they were in the Big East back then. Like, look, 20 games against players of similar skill, coaches that know each other, like, that sounds like a good idea, but it kind of beats the hell out of each other. It seems like it's worked, though, in the NCAA tournament. How much of a correlation do you think the battles of the Big Ten have prepared you for the NCAA tournament?
Well, that was the argument, was it'll help get more teams in the tournament if you play 20. I don't know if that's the case necessarily or not. I think the key is having a good non-conference, and I thought our conference did that. You know, this conference will beat you up. I don't know if we're the best. I think we're one of the best. But what we do have, probably more than any other league, is it's the most physical. We've got really, really smart players. We've got established programs. We've got fan bases. You know, top to bottom, 95% of our conference, there is no apathy whatsoever. And that brings out the most in everybody. You know that when your fans care, when you're on national TV, you better bring it. And so we deal with that every night with the Big Ten Network. And with playing, you know, when you're playing at Purdue, even at Rutgers, it doesn't really matter where you play. You know, you've got to be physically and mentally at your best. And you see right now in the conference that the Big Ten 6-0, and it doesn't surprise me a whole lot. I mean, because I think that our conference is really, really good. I mean, I remember I played a Penn State team at home. We won by 1, and Penn State was 0-10 at the time.
And they're good.
You know, they're a very good team. They got a pro in Lamar Stevens. So top to bottom, I think he's got a lot of depth and, you know, proud of the conference so far.
What was it like to coach against Louisville?
You know what? Honestly, it was not as big of a deal as everybody made it out to be. You know, when we got the draw, it popped up, you know, Louisville 7. I thought we'd be an 8, 9, or a 10 seed. I thought we'd be right around there. So I thought it'd be a chance because it was in Des Moines. You know, I kind of wanted to play in Des Moines just so our fans could be here, and they did show out in a great way last game. But other than that, it was all about basketball. I mean, it wasn't really, you know, for me, like, I don't know Chris Mack all that well. I don't really know a lot of those players all that well. I got a lot of respect for that team. But it was all business. I mean, it was all trying to find ways to help the team win. And it really wasn't a whole lot more emotional than that. You know, I mean, it's an opportunity to go win in the NCAA tournament. You know, it's got to be about your team more than anything else.
Can I ask you an honest question? Like, we know each other a little bit. I mean, we're not like best of friends, but every time, everybody I've come in contact with in regards to you, my interaction with you, I would say you're kind of the opposite of what somebody who assumes who you are is, right? Like, if you say, like, son of a Hall of Fame legendary multiple national championship coach who's a, like, a best-selling author, like, you know, your dad's done everything, right? And then, like, his son, who was assisting, like, oh, that guy, he's got to be so arrogant, full of himself, stuffy, like, you can't tell him anything, you know, prep school kid that, and that's, you have a way about you where you're the exact opposite of that. How has that happened? How are you the opposite of the stereotype son of a guy who's super, super famous and awesome in his job?
Well, it's funny. I worked with Rob Lanier at Florida, and we're still close friends. Rob Lanier used to say to me all the time, because when I got there, I didn't know Rob, and Rob and I are very close now. He used to always say, whenever I saw you in the gyms in the summer, I used to always hate you. And I always laughed. I'm like, that comes with the territory. I don't think that I'm entitled by any means, and I don't think that I act that way. I probably, just because of, you know, in your formative years, I would say growing up, my dad is the head coach of Kentucky. And that's just insanity. I mean, the amount of intention and the amount of fanfare that you get. And I never really liked it. And then he goes to Boston, where, you know, as Boston, like, those guys don't care about that stuff. You know, I go to a school where they could care less who my father is. And I just think that I've seen so many highs, seen so many lows, that I just kind of take it in stride. So I try very, very hard to be humble. I never want to be perceived as a guy who's been handed anything. I mean, I do try not to be arrogant in any ways. I mean, I'm appreciative of anything. So maybe it's because you see some other people like that, that you try very, very hard to not be that way.
How many texts did your dad send you after the game?
You know what's funny? He only, because he's in Milan. He's playing in Milan. He's playing in Milan right now. So I don't know. Did you play overseas?
Yes.
So I think you understand, like, you're traveling so much and you're all over the place. The only thing he really said to me was, you know, so proud of you. That's an awesome win. But that was really it. I mean, it really was not, I think everybody thinks it's like this whole, you know, of fight for your father's name and all that stuff. Like, it's really not about that. I mean, I think it's, he was proud that because we were in the tournament 2 years ago. Last year we were decimated by injuries. You know, and then to be able to bounce back, go beat a really good Louisville team. I think more than anything, he was just excited that we were able to move on.
Okay, so now you get Michigan State, who they're a little bit on fumes. They're banged up, but last time they played your team, they kicked the hell out of you guys. How hard is that? I mean, like, look, any competitors, like, look, we want another shot on a neutral site. We're going to have, it'll be half our fans, half their fans as well. So, and it's not like this is an overwhelmingly talented Michigan State team, but they're very well connected, and they're very connected, and they have, you know, they get the conference player of the year. What's your approach to getting that memory out of their head? Do you want them to remember the butt whooping? Like, how do you handle it?
Good question. You know, I'm not so sure that you want to remind them that you got your butt whipped. I will say this, in this conference, it's tough to win on the road. Breslin Center is probably one of the toughest places to play in the country. Cassius Winston, you know, it's funny. The more and more I watch him, the more I appreciate him. I always thought, hey, maybe not an NBA player, but the more that I watch him, I mean, there's no doubt in my mind that guy's going to play in the NBA. He's unbelievable off the ball screens. Nick Ward, when healthy, is terrific. You know, so I don't really, we just try to make it about execution. I do think that if there is a benefit of a one-day prep, it's probably easier for Michigan State as well as it is us, because we know each other's programs. So there isn't necessarily a whole lot of, you know, from a coaching standpoint, like, you have to explain to the guys, we understand what they're going to do. It's going to be catches and ball screens. It's going to be a lot of wide pin downs. It's going to be running on makes and misses. But it's just a matter of executing better than we did the first time we played. You know, we've been weird. When our offense is not flowing at times in our losses, it's just snowballed. We can't let that happen. We've got to get tougher as the game goes on. And I think that, you know, beating Penn State in the conference tournament, beating Purdue, and then obviously Purdue twice, it's given us some confidence. So I like the way our guys are playing right now.
Amir Coffey's been a changed man. You played him some at the point, and then he went on that run into the Big Ten tournament. We had, what, five straight games of 20 points or more. And, you know, like, look, he's kind of a unique player, and he's so versatile. What's changed, though, with him? It's more than just playing the point, right? His confidence has improved. He looks like a different player. What changed with Amir about, I don't know, 2.5-3 weeks ago?
Yeah, I think it's just kind of like a mentality. You know, it's almost like that Kobe Bryant Mamba mentality type deal. Like, Amir has that a little bit where he gets really, really locked in and engaged. Man, he's tough to stop. And I do think that when the other four guys on the court are all playing together as one, and where we don't get bogged down offensively or not easy to guard, it obviously opens up the court for Amir. You know, when you establish a low post threat with Murphy and with Daniel Aturo, you know, then they've got to make decisions about what they can do. And if Kalsher's hitting three, teams aren't going to help off him as much. So we've become harder to guard. I mean, it's amazing that I don't think I've ever seen it. We scored 86 points last night. Not one player off the bench even had an attempt. I've never seen that before. But with Amir, it's just turning that thing up another level. And when he does that, he's one of the better players in our league.
You mentioned Gabe Kalsher, who I know, like, you look, you got this incredible freshman class. How tall is he with, and how tall is he without the afro? He's got a little fletch to him, right? Like 6'4", 6'5", 6'8", with the afro?
I would say he's definitely 6'4". He's got probably a little bit better size than you'd think. But I tell you what, Daniel Aturo probably gets a lot of the accolades just for our freshman class, but Gabe Kalsher has had as consistent a year as any freshman in our league. He is a terrific shooter, but he guards the best player and willingly does it. I mean, you know, we've had some really good games against shutting down Cassius Winston, and Gabe has had a lot to do with that. He is a throwback in the sense of when he walks on the court, it's right into his routine. He does the same thing every single day before practice, after practice. There's no fluff with him. There's no BS with him. You know, he's all business. And I think that he's just going to get better. And bet, like, his body will get better. His ball handling, his decision-making, all that stuff will improve. And it's just very simple. Like, he just puts in the work. And he doesn't mess around. He doesn't come to practice shooting half-court shots. He is a driven, focused kid.
Yeah, I hate the half-court shots. It is the bane of my existence. I'm telling you, with the kids with the half-court shots. By the way, Jarvis Amursa, he's stolen your hairstyle. Didn't you used to have the dyed? That was your look back in college, wasn't it?
Well, you know what I told him? I said, you can't be a bum and have that haircut, so you better be a good player if you're going to do that. So I tell you what, he is going to be a really good player. He's just playing behind Jordan Murphy. Unbelievable athlete. To his credit, you know, we talk a lot about, you know, competitive vulnerability, and we talk about Russell Westbrook being one of those guys where he puts himself out there during games, and he doesn't care if, you know, he looks like he's trying harder than everybody else. Mm-hmm. He just wants to win. Jarvis Amirsa is like that. Like, he does not care that he looks like he's cheering on his teammates. Like, he pours himself into his teammates, and when he gets on the court, I mean, he plays so hard. He practices so hard. And in return, I think he's going to be a phenomenal player. He's got ridiculous leadership qualities. We brought in, you know, the program, the military guys that go around and speak to all these teams, and they give out an MVP at the end of every 48-hour session. And Jarvis was one of only two freshmen, I think, in the 8 years of doing it, and got the MVP. So phenomenal leadership qualities, and I think he's going to be a really good player.
You mentioned Jordan Murphy, so he's your, you know, he's your star. I mean, along with Amir, And he's such a unique player because he's so athletically gifted in terms of the ability to move, man his size, guard in multiple positions. And even though he struggles to shoot the basketball and people in your league lay off him, he uses that space. Most time, early in the game, he'll settle for a couple. And some, yesterday he made them, obviously. But if not, then he'll take up that space. And now all of a sudden, you got a big guy kind of backpedaling as he comes at them. Is that your coaching or is that a lack of ego in him understanding, hey, I got space, let me use this to my advantage?
1,000% all lack of ego. Most bigs have an identity crisis. And I'll be honest with you, I have never told him not to shoot a three. But it just shows you the lack of attempts is he's a smart player. And you're exactly right. He is so good at going downhill and getting a big to backpedal. And he's phenomenal with his second jump. Because he gets it up on the rim, and when that big lands, and he goes into guys and it backs him up, and he's able to get it and clean up his misses. I think it's remarkable. His whole story is pretty amazing. I mean, to sign with VCU, obviously Shaka Smart gets Texas, to be as reliable as he's been. And, I talked about it on a radio show yesterday, and of course I jinxed him because he had back spasms, but he's never missed a game. He started every game but 11 games. He's never, I can't remember maybe three practices he's missed. So he brings it every day, but you're right about one thing, like he has no ego. There's no beating his chest. He's had so many good plays and he's never ever made it about him. He really is a special kid.
Well, listen, thanks so much for joining us. Congratulations on the win. Obviously, the prep is not that long with Michigan State, but that doesn't make it easy because that is a battle-tested team and one that you guys struggled with last time around. Wish you nothing but the best of luck, and we'll talk to you very, very soon.
All right. Thanks, Doug.
All right. That's Richard Pitino, head coach of the Minnesota Golden Gophers.